Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you from Philadelphia and the Democratic National Convention. It is showtime for the Democrats. Over the weekend, Hillary Clinton named Virginia Senator Tim Kaine as her running mate. That news was quickly overtaken by an email leak from WikiLeaks that showed the Democratic National Committee favoring Hillary over Bernie Sanders. The DNC chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, has essentially been sacked. Dems are saying the Russians hacked the email to favor Donald Trump. It's a full ruckus just as the Democrats rally to make their case. This hour On Point, we are in Philadelphia watching it all unfold. You can join us. How do you see the Hillary Clinton challenge this week? What's the case she needs to make? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's the case that Hillary Clinton wanted you to hear her making over the weekend, the introduction of her running mate in Miami on Saturday. Clinton said Tim Kaine is ready to lead, not like some.
I have to say that Senator Tim Kaine is everything Donald Trump and Mike Pence are not. He is qualified to step into this job and lead on day one.
And then the WikiLeaks leaks. Here's Bernie Sanders yesterday on ABC's This Week. He talked about the DNC's leaked emails showing favoritism toward the Clinton campaign under Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
I think she should resign, period. And I think we need a new chair who is going to lead us in a very different direction. That is, taking on the billionaire class and fighting for an agenda that works for working families.
And she's out, essentially, end of this week. Earlier today, the Democratic congresswoman, outgoing DNC chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, addressed the Florida delegation. She was jeered from the audience. Other members of the audience chanted, "Debbie."
And you will see me every day between now and November 8th on the campaign trail. And we will lock arms, and we will not stand down. We will ensure that the people of Florida have the priorities that we know we need to accomplish. Thank you very much, and on to victory.
Okay, not the soundtrack the Democrats were hoping for. Little echoes there of the boos for Ted Cruz when he didn't endorse Donald Trump last week in Cleveland. We're coming to you today from the Wells Fargo Center, the big arena out on the edge of Philadelphia where the Philadelphia 76ers and the Flyers play. This week, it is all about the Democrats. Joining me from there on Radio Row, Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report. Amy Walter, it's great to have you right here.
Thank you, Tom. I like seeing you in real life.
In real
you
life,
exist.
Here with all the Democrats. Last week, the Republicans. Great to have you here. And with us from Center City in Philadelphia, Howard Feynman, global editorial director at the Huffington Post. He's out on the city, just out of a breakfast with Nancy Pelosi and another with Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook. Howard Feynman, always great to have you with us. Thanks for being here today.
Great to have you, and I have seen you in person on Radio Row in the past,
okay.
So I do know that you exist.
Okay. We all exist.
I had to be here for the news so we can talk about it.
We're happy to have you right there. You're just out of this breakfast. Nancy Pelosi, Robbie Mook, who heads up the Clinton campaign, what are they saying about the flap that has busted out over the weekend, Howard?
Well, Nancy Pelosi steered clear of it as much as she could, although she said that the investigation of the situation at the DNC should continue. That's all she had to say. But I was impressed by the fact that Robbie Mook, who was peppered with questions about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, very rigorously stuck to defending her, saying that she had done a terrific job as chair, that she had helped get Barack Obama reelected, that she put this convention together, that she deserves respect. And people kept saying, yeah, but she's being booed right this minute. I mean, there's a dramatic moment where Jeff Zeleny, one of the reporters there, said, I'm looking at my iPhone here, and it says that that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is being booed in the Florida delegation. What about it, Robbie? And Robbie wouldn't take the bait. I think the Clinton campaign is determined to at least publicly be protective of her, even though privately, you know, they pulled the plug.
So out she goes. Amy, how much is she going to... Any role this week? Or is it formally out at the end of the week? Is there a role?
That's an excellent question, because she had said in this breakfast where she's getting jeered, you know, you're going to see me gavel in and gavel out the convention. I don't know if that's still going to happen. I doubt very much that...
Her name is all over the convention credentials around all of our necks.
You know, I don't know that that's an image that the Clinton campaign is going to want. Is the very first sight from the floor of the convention center is a bunch of delegates jeering the chair of the party. If anything, what the Clinton campaign wants today to be about is unity. Right?
Absolutely.
This is a minor little flap, but we're going to have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Michelle Obama, and they're going to help you forget all about this crazy little... WikiLeaks
thing. Except, Tom, apparently what they're going to do is that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I think, is going to officially gavel the convention in at about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay, before the big cameras are on.
Right, you know, whisked from the stage. So, yeah, there'll be some video, and who's ever there at 4 o'clock p.m. Will either applaud or boo. But they're, as Amy says, they're hoping to get her on and off the stage very quickly, as though kind of fulfilling a contractual commitment almost at the most minimal political level. And then, as Amy says, talk about unity the rest of the night. They're very proud of the fact Mook was going on and on about what a great speech Bernie Sanders was going to give about party unity.
Howard, Amy, tell the Democrats are saying the Russians did this. The Russians hacked into the DNC files and I guess gave it to WikiLeaks. And the Democrats are saying that the Russians did that because they want Donald Trump to be president.
Right.
What part of those assertions has credibility, Amy?
I don't know. I mean, even the New York Times is saying, well, there's some outside experts who say that this is a Russian group, organization,
people
nobody knows
all
for
over
100%.
The place saying,
right,
yeah.
You know, credible organizations.
Yeah.
Look, if we've learned anything from this year, is that the idea about hard and fast facts and what is true and what's not true seem to have taken a backseat to political calculations and, you know, manipulations.
But isn't it pretty darn interesting? If it is Russians, that kind of intervention, Howard, in an American presidential campaign at this moment, right in the heart of it, can you think of any precedent for that?
No, I can't. And Nancy Pelosi, in the first breakfast that I attended, flatly stated that the Russians hacked the DNC. And we're all asking, well, how do you know that? She says, well, that's in the public domain.
She said, it's in the papers.
So it's the New York Times.
I read it somewhere. Right.
She said, I didn't get that from the – she was quick to add, I didn't get that from the House Intelligence Committee, as though she was going to make a systematic study in any case. No, the Democrats are throwing that around. And by the way, I think – and I didn't see this firsthand, but it came up at the breakfast that Julian Assange apparently has said – that, you know, there's more stuff in there that's going to force, you know, going to put Hillary Clinton in jail, or words to that effect. And Robbie Mook was asked about it and said, you know, I'm not staying up nights worrying about what Julian Assange has to say. Well, I would, if Julian Assange is making a threat like that, I would stay up all night. So it's a very strange situation. In addition, historically, you have it's the Republicans who ran against the Russians for decades. Now it's, you know, in the communist influence in the United States, now ironically it's the Democrats who are playing the Red Scare card, only now it's Putin and not the Politburo.
I mean, Donald Trump has had kind of nice things to say about Vladimir Putin, and Putin has had relatively nice things to say about Donald Trump, so they've got something to work with there. But what's real here? Meanwhile, Debbie Wasserman Schultz will stay on in some honorary capacity in the Clinton campaign. Is that right, Amy?
I guess so. I mean, she's, again, over the jeering you could hear her say, I'm going to be on the campaign trail. Look, Debbie Wasserman Schultz's immediate issue is that she has a primary coming up. I think in August.
Yeah, to regain
her seat. So that is her number one priority right now. Is I got to go. If I were her, I'd go back to South Florida, campaign for my seat, and then go on from there. And the other thing is, look, the Clinton campaign does not need Debbie Wasserman Schultz as a surrogate. They have great surrogates.
Yeah.
They have the President of the United States. That's
here
the best surrogate
Clinton,
you can absolutely
week,
have.
Right
absolutely, I would put Bill Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren on the trail before I would worry about putting the chair of the DNC.
But the Democrats do have issues. Sorry, Howard. Yeah.
Tom, let me just add quickly that primary, Amy makes a very important point, because that primary is between Debbie Schultz, a Clinton person, and somebody supported by Bernie Sanders up and down the line. I think one reason why Robbie Mook was careful not to publicly throw Debbie Wasserman Schultz mm-hmm. under the bus this morning at this breakfast
yep.
was
yep.
they would prefer her to win that primary, because if the Bernie candidate wins, then you're going to have a whole nother round of stories about fissures in the Democratic Party.
And we haven't even fully come to that yet. In the streets of Philadelphia this weekend, this was just yesterday, Bernie Sanders supporters marched shouting anti-Hillary chants.
Hell no, DNC! We won't go for Hillary! Hell no, DNC! We won't go for Hillary!
Howard, maybe here's the nub of it. I mean, we talked a lot about fissures in the GOP last week, but how big is the fissure in the Democratic Party now as their convention begins?
I don't think it's quite as deep, because I think Donald Trump can and will be a unifying factor among Democrats. I think that the fact that Bernie Sanders himself is, according to Robbie Mook, going to give a very much of a speech urging unification of the party will be helpful. On the other hand, you know, Bernie Sanders has uncorked something on the left that Donald Trump uncorked on the right.
Yep.
And even if Bernie Sanders gets up there and tells everybody to go along, that doesn't automatically mean they will. But my sense is, yeah, there are people in the streets here. Philly's a bigger city. It's open. There's more places to protest. They're allowing it more. And there's just more activity here. I'm not sure that anecdotal evidence means that those Bernie people won't show up. But that's the big concern. That is, as far as I can tell, the biggest strategic concern for the Clinton folks.
We've got a lot to look at here. I want to ask you, Amy Walter, if there may be a Ted Cruz moment of reservation anywhere in the Bernie Sanders speech tonight. But hold that thought. We've got to take a short break right here. Howard Feinman, please stand by here in Philadelphia. Amy Walter with us right here in the big arena, where tonight the Democrats will have their night one, opening night of the Democratic National Convention. Nathan Gonzalez joins us in just a moment. We'll be talking with Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow from Michigan. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. We're looking at the Democrats' quest for unity behind Hillary Clinton, and we are in the arena where tonight Bernie Sanders will step to the podium and speak on her behalf. Michelle Obama will be there. Is Elizabeth Warren tonight or not? Is it finally tonight she's going to be? And then right on through this week. You can hear a little bit of the house band in the arena already thumping and pumping and warming up back there. And you can join us in this hour. What is Hillary need to say to do this week in Philly, and does Tim Kaine, Virginia senator, help her get it done? Here was Hillary Clinton on Saturday repeatedly comparing the tone of fear at the Republican convention last week to the sound of her campaign. In Philadelphia, we will offer a very different vision for our country, she said.
One that is about building bridges, not walls. Embracing the diversity that makes our country great. Lifting each other up, standing together, because we know there's nothing we can't accomplish once we make up our minds.
Hillary Clinton rallying the troops before the convention even begins over the weekend. Amy Walter is with us here in the arena, national editor of the Cook Political Report. Howard Feinman is with us in Philadelphia, just out of breakfasts with Nancy Pelosi and Robbie Mook, who heads up the Clinton campaign. Nathan Gonzalez joins us in the arena as well right now, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Nathan, thanks very much for being with us here in Philly. We saw you last week in Cleveland. We're all just moving. We're nomads.
Thank you. Good to be here again.
So what are the Democrats up against here? Did Donald Trump get a bump, a big bump, a little bump, some bump out of the convention in Cleveland or not?
It appears that from the two or three polls that we've seen this morning that Donald Trump received anywhere from a couple of point to a few point bump. I think the CNN poll had it at 7 points. And I think a couple of sobering reminders. One is that...
Sobering,
you know,
for whom?
Sobering for journalists, I think. That those of us that were in Cleveland and analyzing every speech and every, you know, how does this play, you know, polling is a way to tell us how does it actually playing.
Yep.
I mean, these are
yep.
people that aren't attending the convention. They're watching
outside
it on
the bubble.
TV. But the other thing is we have to remember, let's wait till what happens after this week. You know, Democrats will have their four-day commercial. They'll have their opportunity to make the case. And, you know, let's look at the polling 3 weeks, you know, a month from now. I think it's going to be more instructive about what are the fundamentals of the election going into the sprint.
Howard, you're just out of a breakfast with the Clinton campaign manager. What did they have to say about the Republican convention last week and its implications for the Clinton campaign?
Well, you won't be surprised to know that Robbie Mook thought it was a disastrous convention in Cleveland. For the Republicans. And I think one of the points he stressed several points. One of them was the lack of specificity on behalf of Trump, Trump's unsuitability to be president, and the negative tone of the Republican convention. But that notwithstanding, he did concede that the Republicans did get a bounce out of it. But he said what Nathan just said, which is that, you know, wait till we finish our turn, and we'll get our bounce, and that's when you begin to actually look at the numbers. But my sense of it is, if Hillary comes out, you know, a few points ahead, when all this is said and done, that presages to me a very, very close election.
Because she needs more than a few points, given the kind of bruising.
Yes. She's. I mean, what ideally. If what they're saying, if Robbie Mook's confidence that he displayed at this breakfast this morning is more than show, I mean, I think they need to be way ahead. If Donald Trump is so beyond the pale, if he's so obviously unqualified to be president, if he's so lax in specificity, if he's so cynical, if he's so hate-filled, if he's so divisive,
if all those things...
then Hillary should be lapping him on the track, but that's not happening, and the question is why.
Amy Walter, what is the heart of what Hillary Clinton needs to roll out here? I mean, after all, you've got Donald Trump, who won the Republican primaries, who won the nomination, who got some kind of bump out of that convention, and he's all about change. Now, a lot of people say, oh, my, that's the worst kind of change possible. That's what the Democrats would say, and some Republicans. On the other hand, on the other side, she's got Bernie Sanders, who has also been and continues to be all about change.
Right.
So what does she stand for in between those two giant change talkers?
Tom, that's the exact point here. Look, if this were a quote-unquote normal election, and there's been nothing normal about anything that we're seeing now, the candidate who is part of the in party would be behind. This is a change year. This is the environment is roiled. And it's clear that a status quo politician is not what people are looking for.
So what's
she? So she is the status quo. So she should be clearly behind. Mm-hmm. What is keeping her in contention, I would argue, is the fact that Donald Trump is the alternative. That's how you can look at this race. Mm-hmm. You either say Donald Trump should be leading by a bigger percentage, given the mood and given who she is, or you say, well, given who Donald Trump is, she should be a bigger lead. But I think that just goes to show the push and pull here of the competing interests. Where America wants to go is change, but Trump is bringing them a different direction.
Unless,
the other thing,
can I just make one more point,
Tom, is I think the bigger challenge for her as well is I can't tell you what Hillary Clinton's message is. I really can't. It's stronger together. It's we're better than this. It's their slogan. There are a lot of slogans, but not a big message. And she needs to firmly give the people watching this convention an idea about what she is going to do for as president for them, not just against Trump.
The presumption in all of this, Nathan. Oh, yes. Howard, please. Yes.
Just very quickly, I at this breakfast this morning, Robbie Mook said, the economics is the key. Our message on economics is the key. We're going to be getting to that in the next few weeks. That just underscores Amy's point here. If it is about economic discontent, and I think that's at the core of it, that should have been thought through and aggressively presented in substance and in a memorable way early on. The fact that Robbie Mook said that, don't worry, we're going to
get to it in some weeks. I mean, the election is some weeks at this point.
That goes to Amy's point. Go ahead.
And even if they when and if they do get to it, Nathan, you know, what do they have to say about it that is really like, hey, a whole new thing? But this brings me to my question for you, Nathan. The Trump assertion is the country's in dire, dire crisis and needs a big change fast. The Sanders assertion from a different angle entirely is not so different. We've got huge problems. We need a big change. We need it right now. Maybe is there some big portion of the American, maybe the majority, who aren't at those desperate for change polls, and maybe that's where Hillary plants her flag and takes it home. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a similar synergy, I guess, between the Trump and the Sanders messages is that they're both populist messages, anti-establishment. It's just that, you know, Sanders is more against big banks and Wall Street. Trump is more kind of anti-everything. But is
there a big population in the middle that's not royal, that's not freaking out, that doesn't feel like they're desperate, that doesn't want change as desperately as we hear from those two corners?
If you look at the polling question, is the country off in the right direction or off on the wrong track? I mean, only about 30% or less believe that the country's heading in the right direction. So there is that change angst that Amy was talking about, but you have two very, very different alternatives to that angst that people are feeling.
Nathan Gonzalez, Amy Walter, Howard Feinman, please stand by. Sitting down with us right now here in the big arena in Philadelphia is U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow, Democrat from Michigan. Senator Stabenow, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's exciting to be here.
So do you have a disunity unfolding here against all expectations right at the start of the convention that is equivalent to what we saw at the Republicans last week? We've got these WikiLeaks emails out there. They show enough favoritism for Hillary Clinton that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is now out or headed out as head of the DNC. Has a disunity chasm opened up here as you start that's equivalent to what we saw in Cleveland?
No way. Not a chance. This is a blip. What you have is emails that were exposed that were wrong, and the chair of the DNC is stepping down. End of story. And so from my perspective, what we're going to see tonight is Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and our First Lady Michelle Obama and Cory Booker kicking off an incredible convention. And then we're going to move on up to the highlight, which is the formal nomination of Hillary Clinton to be our next president.
I know you've got a big lineup this week, and it does stand in stark contrast to last week where
people
so
speak.
Many Republican heavy hitters did not come. Donald Trump leaned very hard on his immediate family and his children, though we'll see some of that.
He was like looking for people like the custodian outside or waitress, please, can you come and speak at the convention?
Yeah, and still, Senator, you've got a lot of Bernie Sanders people out there, supporters, who he's been saying, come on now, it's time. But you know there's resistance to that in the Sanders movement. And the WikiLeaks over this weekend is not exactly a warm invitation to them to forget and forgive and come on in the Clinton tent.
Well, there's no question that, as I said, that was wrong what was done. But the response is what people should be paying attention to. Most progressive platform ever, major pieces of this that relate to Bernie Sanders and his supporters and, frankly, things that I support strongly. And the fact is that the right thing was done in terms of responding. And so I understand that frustration. I also know that on our side, we're debating the best way to get to where we all want to go. We all want to make sure everybody is covered with health care. So we are debating the best way to get there. We all know college costs need to go down. And so we're debating the best way to get there. On the other side, they want to repeal health care, privatize Medicare, you know, let the banks handle student loans and doesn't matter what they charge. I mean, you go on and on and on. So what we're talking about is the best way to get to where we all want to go. And that's what this convention is going to be about.
What about this situation where Trump puts himself out there as an agent of change, enormous change, huge change, and so does Bernie Sanders, so has Bernie Sanders. And now you've got Hillary Clinton positioned between those two. Does she come off inevitably looking like a status quo candidate?
No, I think, you know what I find so interesting is the idea that after almost 100 years of women getting the right to vote, that the first woman being nominated by a major party would
that.
Be
it's
viewed
a big
as
deal.
Status. As status quo, it's like, hello, change. This is change. And here's the other thing that I would say, because I work with Bernie and worked with Hillary both in the Senate and probably, 95% or more of the time, we're all voting the same way. Donald Trump is a bully and, in my judgment, a fraud when it comes to talking about things like fair trade, which I care deeply about as somebody opposed to TPP. This is a guy who has more than 11 different countries making his products that he ships in, and they all make less than American workers. And he says, well, then you should make less so I can do something here. That is not what people in Michigan want to see happening. I can tell you that.
Let me test one piece of this. We've got Amy Walter sitting right here from the Cook Political Report. Amy, is having a woman in the White House the change that you hear voters clamoring for. It is history. It would be history.
No
it's
doubt.
Already history-making this week.
No doubt.
But
and
is it the change people are clamoring for?
I think it will be interesting to see. Here you have the first woman nominated for president, Philadelphia, right? We think of it the
cradle of our Constitution,
all of that. Yep. It's going to be a powerful message. At the same time, I think the challenge for Hillary Clinton is the fact that she is so well known. She is known as Hillary Clinton first, a woman second. If this were a female that we didn't know very well, somebody like when Barack Obama came up in 2008, he wasn't particularly well known. He was anything you wanted him to be. You could put all your hopes and dreams and expectations on him.
And he asked for that, and he got
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Can I jump in?
Yes, Senator Sumner.
A woman would never be able to do that. Because
You can't just appear out of nowhere and become the...
No, because you have to be overqualified. I mean, my judgment, I have been involved from the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, helping to open doors for myself and other women. And in every case, every woman I know has had to be overqualified to be able to get seen as serious. So the good news is we finally have somebody who's overqualified. And so, but the truth of the matter is there's no way she would have the same capacity to come to the presidency of the United States.
Could just fly in like Donald Trump on his billionaire airplane to be taken seriously that way.
There's no way. There's no way. So, of course, and she's had years of them attacking her and saying things, and every single time they're proved wrong, every single time they go, oops, okay, I guess that wasn't true, and then they go on and make up something else. But let me go back just one more thing,
okay.
And that is I don't underestimate the people's feeling about change, because in Michigan, that is a for real thing.
Okay.
We saw Wall Street bailed out. The good news for us is that the automobile industry was rescued and we're doing manufacturing jobs, but the rest of it was not done. I mean, Mitch McConnell made the decision that Barack Obama ran on hope and change, and if nothing changed for average people, they'd lose hope and that we'd be where we are.
So if it's President Clinton, what's the change she would
bring? We're going to take
the
rest of it.
How?
Absolutely. First of all, we're going to take back the U.S. Senate as a part of this.
Okay.
And we're going to be doubling down on good-paying infrastructure jobs and raising the minimum wage and equal pay and lowering the costs of college and doing and protecting people's pensions and doing all those things that make a difference for everybody to feel the recovery.
So that's the magic formulation. I can bring you what Barack Obama could not get through.
It's the rest of the story. We'll come back with a Democratic
Senate.
Can she
really? Why wouldn't Mitch McConnell and the rest just do the same thing with him, with President Clinton they did with President Obama?
Because, first of all, I think that she brings a different set of relationships, and I've watched her in the Senate work across the aisle and, frankly, run circles around these guys.
Yeah.
And when she's not running, they like her. And so they're going to have a very interesting situation.
They're going to like her in the White House? They're going to like Hillary Clinton in the White House?
You know,
it didn't sound that way in Cleveland last week.
No, it certainly didn't. It never sounds like that when she's running, and then they all want to work with her and she gets elected. That's what I saw in the
Senate. Are you buying that? The senator lays out her case here. What do you say?
Well, the difficulty of it is that Hillary Clinton's suggestion that because she understands the inside game, she can get things done and, as the senator says, finish the rest of the story of the agenda on behalf of working people.
Yeah.
That's a great sounding message, except for the fact that people's distrust of government in Washington is so corrosive at this moment that arguing your expertise about the inside game, I'm not sure resonates with those voters and the blue-collar voters that they also need to win states like Ohio and Pennsylvania. I've been doing reporting in both of those states. I happen to be from Pittsburgh. I know the background. Those people are so distrustful of government right now, even though they get a lot of benefits from government, that people who talk about using the levers of power in Washington. Yeah. Paradoxically, I mean, it's clear that's what...
Howard, hold the thought. I get the senator for 30 more seconds here.
Sure.
Make your last case, Senator.
Well,
how's she going to get it done?
You know, I agree with Howard that there's incredible distrust of government. And, in fact, the Republicans have created that and wanted that, and really everything they've done has created the platform for Donald Trump here. But I would also say she is not arguing inside game. This is somebody who's been an outsider, been an insider, has experience on all sides. She can actually get things done for people, and I know in Michigan she can really make people's lives better.
Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, thanks so much for sitting down with
My
us pleasure. Here in the arena in Philadelphia. Thanks
My
a lot for
pleasure.
Coming by.
Yeah.
Howard Fineman, stick with us. Huffington Post there. Amy Walter at Cook Political Report. Nathan Gonzalez with the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Listeners, we are in Philadelphia. We are in the arena, about 30 feet from the entrance to the hall where exactly this evening it all begins to unfold. What do the Dems need to do? I'm Tom Ashbrook in Philadelphia. This is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, and we are in Philadelphia this week for the Democratic National Convention. Cleveland's all done, though the reverberations go on. Tonight, it all starts here in Philadelphia. Hillary Clinton, top of the ticket. Tim Kaine, Virginia Senator, at her side. Bernie Sanders speaks tonight. Michelle Obama speaks tonight. Elizabeth Warren speaks tonight. And over the weekend, WikiLeaks flap out their emails from the Democratic National Committee out, showing favoritism toward the Clinton campaign. The chair of that committee, the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, out as well now as of the end of this week. You can join us this hour. Can you believe we're talking about Russians maybe behind a leak at the heart of the U.S. presidential campaign? Did Trump and company make an effective case last week against Hillary Clinton? What's the case Clinton and co. need to make against Donald Trump this week? And does Hillary Clinton satisfy the call for an agent of change, or is she bringing something else to the party? Tim Kaine suggested on Saturday there's a recklessness about Donald Trump and that he could unleash instability in the world, especially with regard to Russia.
While our service members are out there on the front lines, Trump saying he'd leave our allies at the mercy of an increasingly aggressive Russia. And folks, that's an open invitation to Vladimir Putin to just roll on in. Even a lot of Republicans say that that's terribly dangerous.
Just roll on in. And here's Hillary Clinton on 60 Minutes last night talking about her response to Donald Trump's attacks on her.
I'm going to respond to what he has said that I think is so fundamentally at odds with who we are as a nation, where we need to be heading in the future, and the kind of dangerous, risky leadership that he's promising.
Dangerous, risky Donald Trump. Howard Fineman joins us here in Philadelphia, global editorial director at the Huffington Post. Amy Walter is here, national editor of the Cook Political Report. Nathan Gonzalez is here, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report, and you can join us. We've got a lot to look at. Let's go to Pensacola, Florida. Liz is calling. Hi, Liz, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I live in Pensacola, but I'm traveling with the 50 Causes ride across America, and I just want to say that the senator from Michigan was directly on point. Look, Tom, the Russians, North Korea, and countries who want to dominate the U.S. are endorsing Trump. That is a strong and a scary message. Hillary is the most qualified candidate to be president of the U.S.
Is it a sideshow, though, Liz? Is it a sideshow talking about Russians and whether or not they hacked the DNC? I mean, do you really think that it would be the Kremlin calling the shots in the Trump administration?
No, not calling the shots, but people have to understand Russia wants Trump to be president.
I haven't heard from North Korea. I don't know about that. How do you figure why Donald Trump makes positive noises about Vladimir Putin? Why would somebody do that?
Well, first of all, he admires, I think he and Putin admire each other's style. They both have a cologne named after them, so there you go. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, I think the authoritarian, one authoritarian recognizes another. I think also that Donald Trump has done a lot of business with Russian investors. Don't forget, Donald Trump from the beginning was pretty much shunned by the big New York banks when he came to Manhattan to be a real estate developer. Yeah. They didn't want to lend him money. He went to various sources, Chinese, you name it, and Russians.
And I think there's a Trump and Putin know a lot of the same people in common. So that's part of it. And also Trump has a kind of isolationist tinge to his foreign policy. He doesn't want us involved anywhere for the most part. And that includes, you know, his amazing comments about NATO.
But is he really saying, hey, Vladimir, if you want Estonia, it's yours, baby?
Well, that's in essence, if Estonia doesn't pay protection money, man, Donald Trump's view of NATO is sort of like a protection racket in New Jersey. And with all due respect to New Jersey, so they kind of like each other. And then in terms of staff, Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman for Trump's campaign, was the right hand man of the and political advisor to the pro Putin leader of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of commonality there, and it's certainly bears further investigation, to say the least. It's an amazing development.
Howard, take it easy on New Jersey. We're about 2 miles from New Jersey, sitting right here. Ben in Austin,
it's where my hotel is.
Yeah, mine too. We gotta go. We gotta sleep somewhere tonight, Howard. Ben in Austin, Texas. Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
just to give you some background, I'm a Bernie Sanders volunteer, and I grew up in Burlington, Vermont. And Bernie Sanders actually nominated me to go to West Point, so I consider myself pretty close to him. You know, myself and 13 million other Bernie Sanders supporters have donated thousands of dollars, hours of our time, months of our life for this campaign. And the latest WikiLeaks have only proven what we already knew about what was happening with the DNC. And while it's vindicating, it's also really infuriating because this strikes at the heart of what our democracy is and what separates us from corrupt countries like, you know, like Russia and Eastern European nations, you know? And, I mean, the things that it confirmed, like the DNC has been colluding with various media outlets such as CNN, MSNBC, and Politico. They fed narratives like the Bernie Bros and violence at the Nevada State Convention and questions about his religious background that just weren't true.
So what are you going to do about it, Ben? What are you going to do at the ballot box?
Well, just one more thing is they actually planted mold in the Sanders campaign. There's emails in there that talk about that. And so, I mean, what this means for me and I think a lot of my supporters is, I mean, before this happened, I think there was a poll out that said 50% of Sanders supporters weren't going to vote for Hillary and 25% of those were Trump supporters, something like that. I think you're only going to see those numbers go up now. I mean, that was before this happened.
But which numbers go up? You mean the numbers for Trump? Are you serious? Really? Sanders supporters are going to go that way?
I hope they don't go for Trump. I think that the numbers that won't vote for Hillary are going to go up, though. They're either going to stay home or vote for a third party. I really hope they vote for a third party because, you know, when this campaign started, we accepted that, you know, we wouldn't be able to make any progress on global warming or any other issues when our representation has had their pockets lined by the oil industry. Now we understand that we can't have that change until we have this two-party system effectively destroyed or at least a third or fourth party that's viable.
Are you willing to risk a Trump presidency in the interim as a Sanders supporter who surely doesn't share a lot of Donald Trump's positions?
I don't think we have a choice. I mean, let me rephrase that. I think everybody has a choice, and they need to know that they have a choice. I think both of the third-party candidates are great options, and whether you're voting for a conservative third-party candidate like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, you need to understand that those are better options, and you have that choice.
Ben, we've got it. Let me hold the thought right there and get one more from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Christopher is calling. Christopher, you're on the air.
I had to be 21 in order to vote. I'm that freaking old. I cannot believe that I'm going to end up voting. That she's the best feminist we can come up with.
We lost you for a second. Did you say you can't believe you're going to end up voting for Hillary? Is that what you said, Christopher?
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I will not like it. I will blame myself and feel guilty till I drop dead.
What did you
that
want?
Being,
What did you want? Who?
I wanted someone who I actually could not believe was a liar. I wanted someone who I could believe was actually a feminist and not an opportunist. I wanted someone who represented, do I believe a woman could be a good president? Absolutely. Do I believe anything that comes out of the Clinton machine? Absolutely not. I never voted for him. But the election wasn't that bad.
But you're going to vote for Hillary in the end. Christopher, I want to get a couple more here, but I appreciate your call, Santa Fe. Let me go to Frank. Thank you very much. Franklin, Tennessee. Susan, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say I was a Bernie fan. I still am a Bernie fan. But I believe in my heart that Hillary had to become one of them to get where she is. Now, is she going to be just the status quo when she gets there? Maybe. Hopefully not, though. Hopefully when she's in the position of the president, then she can, maybe we can then see the real Hillary. That's my hope. And I'll
and the, I appreciate it very much, your call, Susan. Amy, she's got Tim Kaine on the ticket. Does that help her with the Sanders camp or not?
The early read is no, it doesn't, because it just confirms that she is the status quo candidate looking for security rather than to shake things up.
Because he's a centrist?
Because he's a centrist, and also he's a member of the Senate, and he's not part of the, you know, shake it up caucus, in term whether it was going to be somebody like Sherrod Brown,
yep,
senator from Ohio, obviously Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts. But I think these callers, it was fascinating to listen to all of them, because you're literally watching, what is it, the Kubler-Ross stages, right, of dealing with grief, where there's some have acceptance,
yeah,
some have resignation, some still have anger, and that we are literally watching in those calls how does a party come together, or at all. Basically, they still have to go through their processing, and not everybody's through processing.
Is that okay, Nathan Gonzalez, on the very day that the convention is opening and people are still grieving about some portion about who the candidate is?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first day of the convention, but we still have 3 months to go in the election. I mean, mm-hmm, there's still time for them, mm-hmm, to work through these various stages. One thing that I feel like more aware of in Cleveland was the media presence, and how I feel like this plays into this week is the senator said, you know, really nothing to see here, you know, move along, there's no problems within the party,
yeah,
but
yeah,
the moment one person stands up in that hall and boos, you know, Hillary Clinton, there will be 5 cameras in their face,
oh, yeah,
amplifying that message.
Yeah.
And the same thing was at the protesters, yeah, in Cleveland. There really, well, in
barely
large part, weren't
protested,
a lot of protesters,
no,
but it was 3 deep rows of reporters covering
it. One flag burner and 300 press on
so
top.
So it's going to be, I think we are going to see some sort of demonstration, and the Clinton campaign is going to have to deal with it.
Susan in Newcastle, New Hampshire. Susan, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if, first, if the DNC emails may just show a tremendous amount of frustration on their part. And I also
with what?
Wondered,
with what, Susan? With what?
Well, they had to come up against a certain barrage of media coverage. From July to November, neither Trump nor Bernie had to really buy any media coverage. It was from,
sure,
morning till night, 7 days a week, all the free coverage that they wanted.
They were both very unusual candidates, doing quite well.
Yeah, but unusual, I mean, there were no issues. It was the most outrageous behavior on one side. And
Bernie Sanders had no issues? Are you serious?
Pardon me?
Are you serious that Bernie Sanders had no issues?
He showed his issues. He gave out free college tuition is what he was offering. Even Lindsey Graham, for heaven's sakes, was frustrated with trying to get any message across. As to Bernie, I wonder if he couldn't speak to the followers out there that are not on the unity train. And why isn't he trying to do something like that? Instead, he seems to be stirring them up by saying he's not satisfied with the Tim Kaine appointment. He's still saying the caucuses were not fair unless he won them. If he won them, they were okay. If he lost, there was something wrong with them.
Susan, we've got it. We have a short time. Let us pick all of this up. Howard Fineman, Bernie Sanders will take that podium tonight. I mean, this is his chance. We saw what Ted Cruz, the loser, who got the podium, did last week at Cleveland. What exactly do you expect from Bernie when it comes to endorsing Hillary Clinton? Of course, he's endorsed her already, but I mean wrapping his arms around her. And will that be tempered somehow by him wanting to keep a Sanders movement going in and through and maybe even beyond a Clinton administration?
Well, here's the problem. According to Robbie Mook, DeSantis
himself
is going to give a...
the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, who just said a little while ago to us that, hey, Sanders is going to give a great speech of pledging unity and support for Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
We said, well, how do you know? Have you read the speech? He said, I'm not saying. I'm just telling you it's going to be a great speech. But as others were saying, the floor of the convention is an entirely different place. And, you know, who had heard of Kendall Unruh, you know, of Colorado in Cleveland? She became the star of Cleveland as the opponent of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Those cameras are going to be on who's ever in the hall, shouting for Bernie's candidacy, saying who knows what about Hillary. So there's what happens on the podium, and there's what happens on the floor of the convention.
Amy, what are you going to be looking for tonight?
I think Howard makes a really good point, because here's the distinction between the RNC and the DNC. In the RNC, you had establishment party leaders either staying away
in droves
or putting their own message out there while endorsing Trump, but not full-heartedly, like a Paul Ryan or a Mitch McConnell.
Couldn't
then
Sanders
you obviously
do that?
Have Ted Cruz not
yep.
doing it all.
Yep.
Here, you're going to have the establishment on board. I think Sanders is going to give a very good speech in terms of what it does for Hillary Clinton. He is not going to pull a Ted Cruz. He stood out there in New Hampshire a couple weeks ago, linking arms with her.
Yep.
So I don't think we're going to see that. The difference is you're going to have everybody on stage, the establishment supporting her. The question is, on the floor, is that commitment going to be there? That's really the big difference between these two conventions. And, you know, you realize that 45% of the folks in this hall are Bernie delegates. This is not just like
a
couple people
who
have showed up here. There are a lot of Bernie delegates. Some of them may be like one of the callers who said, all right, I voted for Bernie. Yep. I'm sort of resigned to the fact I'm going to be for Hillary, or we need to get behind her. So there'll be a lot of pro-Hillary Bernie delegates. But the fact is there is a big group of people here who represent a very different perspective on where the Democratic Party should go and who should be leading it.
Nathan, do you feel confidence in that quarter that Clinton Kane would carry the Sanders movement ideas into the White House?
Well, let's say, will they get elected? I think that Trump can be a unifying factor for the Democratic Party. But I think Sanders is an example of a growing division that we're going to see in primaries and later cycles. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat until this race. And he took the most powerful Democratic family of this generation to the brink.
Yeah.
I mean, that shows me it's about the message. And someone else beyond Sanders will take it up. And those Democrats, they've enjoyed the Republican Civil War. They're going to have problems.
Like Trump, who changed parties 5 times in the last 20 years or so. Maybe a new day here. Nathan Gonzalez with the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Great to have you with us in Philadelphia. Thanks
My
so
pleasure.
Much. Amy Walter with the Cook Political Report. Always great to have you, Amy.
Enjoyed it, Tom.
And Howard Fineman right out of breakfast with Nancy Pelosi and Robbie Moog. Howard, thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted to do it, and thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook in Philadelphia. This is On Point.